Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead, take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
Hey folks, welcome into On to Waveland. It's the Cubs podcast here at The Athletic. I am Brett Taylor, joined by Sahadev Sharma and Patrick Mooney. It's the whole gang. We got the whole gang here.
We're back.
Today. I don't know, because it's been three in a row where it was just two of us. So, you know, folks can expect a really, really zippy, impressive podcast today, I think, now that we're all here to share our many thoughts. Coming off a weekend in St. Louis, where the Cubs took 2 of 3 from the Cardinals, I believe I saw, and this felt right, that even as the Cubs have performed erratically over the last few years on the whole, and have maybe not done so well at home against the Cardinals, I think they still have done pretty well at Busch against the Cardinals kind of throughout this period, which... You know, there's only so much you could take from that as being signal of anything, but at least from a fan perspective, it's nice, you know, seeing Kyle Hendricks pitch exceedingly well to open the series at Busch was nice. Nice for fans who want to hate on the Cardinals and nice for fans who wanted a moment to remember that, yes, sometimes when everything's clicking, Kyle Hendricks is still going to be able to put together a good outing. Maybe we start there. Anything in particular to note or say? Because I think we're going to talk about a lot of pitching from that series, because I have some other stuff we want to touch on. But as far as Hendricks goes, bounce back outing from him, but maybe also just kind of this is who he is now.
Yeah, which I think you want to see that... You want to see, obviously you want more of those outings than the bad ones, right? But I think we're trying to figure out what point he is in his career, what type of expectations he can have over the next few years of his contract while he's with the Cubs. What is Kyle Hendricks? And he can't be the guy where half of those starts are just like he can barely get you 4 innings of quality work, right? He's getting lit up. He's giving up too many home runs. You can't have those like half or more of the time. But if they're sprinkled in there with 20 of these types of starts and you have some of those bad starts, that's a usable 4 or 5, right? Especially a veteran, a guy that can be leaned on by the youngsters for advice and has those intangible qualities as well. You need a pitcher that can eat innings. He may not be the dominant force that he was in 16 or 20, but that doesn't mean he can't be valuable or helpful to the team. And I think that's, you know, like we've said so many times, part of the point of the rest of the season is kind of figuring out what you have going forward. And if Hendricks, if he looks more or closer to the guy that he was over the weekend than the guy that he was the previous start, then you have to feel a little bit more comfortable about, okay, we have a 4 or 5 in the rotation. You can't, and maybe he's more, right? Maybe he bounces back and he finds that 2-3 version of himself for a couple more years. But you need to feel good that he's not just like, ugh, every single time this guy goes out here, it's going to be a struggle. And we don't know how we're going to give ourselves a chance to win.
If I'm a GM of a contending team that needs pitching, I'm absolutely calling Jed Hoyer and being like, I want Kyle Hendricks. You know, we go back a couple of years ago and maybe Kyle didn't win a Cy Young Award like Cole Hamels did. I know they're different pitchers, but that was kind of the logic when the Cubs got him a couple of years ago from the Rangers, of just kind of like, let's throw this against the wall and see what sticks. Like, he's got playoff experience. He's a good guy. He knows how to pitch. And I don't know, don't know. Part of me wonders if, you know, Kyle Hendricks is in kind of a different environment, a different coaching staff. I don't know. And obviously this coaching staff has been good for him for a long run. I'm just wondering if you just gave Kyle Hendricks a reset and said, hey, these last 2 months, we just need you to pitch every fifth day and you're going to get a lot of offensive support. You're going to have a rested, legit bullpen behind you, maybe some better defenders. I don't know, just all of it. I would want him on my team in, you know, a pennant race and not to start a game one of a playoff series anymore, but as a guy who is a very good bet to stay healthy and won't, you know, I'm trying to think of the phrase that would be appropriate for a podcast, someone who won't be scared on the mound in a big game, like, I would want him. I just feel like this is not something that Kyle has said or anything. This is just more kind of my kind of gut reaction of this, of just a, I don't know, just a change of scenery. We always talk about that with different pitchers, and I'm curious what Kyle Hendricks would be like. I don't know. The Yankees don't need a pitch, but if he was in New York or in just a different environment to where he could kind of refresh, I think that you've seen him shutting down teams like the Padres and Cardinals, teams that you know, expect to be in the playoffs, and I just wonder. I don't think the Cubs are pushing this idea to like get rid of him or anything, but I think, I don't know, like I said, I'd want him on my team if I was chasing a playoff berth this year.
I think your Cole Hamels comp there, that's really interesting. I hadn't thought about that. And of course, you're not talking about the pitchers or even necessarily where they were in terms of their projected effectiveness. But if people remember when the Cubs targeted and acquired Cole Hamels, two things. One, he did seem very much on the downswing of his career in a lot of ways. And he had been on some non-competitive teams, and there was thinking that he could be among these guys that with just a little work with a new system here and in a new independent race and all these things that perhaps it could help stabilize him and get a little better performance. And as Cubs fans remember, he was fantastic after that. And what's interesting about the comparison too is that Hamels, of course, came with that extra year of control. Hendricks does as well. And in this instance, I almost feel like that works against the idea of the Cubs moving him, both because you're not guaranteed to get value out of that year if you're an acquiring team. So it's not necessarily going to be an additive factor in a trade. So you're looking at probably pretty minimal trade return going to the Cubs. And I think that there is a calculation there that they would have to make of like, do we really want to trade someone like Kyle Hendricks just to net like one flyer prospect who's not likely to do anything meaningful for us? Because again, the comparison to that Cole Hamels trade, a couple guys we've never heard of or never heard from since went the other way in that one. And I think the Cubs could talk themselves into saying, well, even if he's not able to help us this year for a postseason run, we want his stabilizing presence to be there in spring training, to be there as we open the next season, perhaps with some additional young arms, et cetera, et cetera. It's just not hard to think that the best value to the Cubs for Hendricks is keeping him regardless of what happens, you know, over the next month or so, so that they have him available in 2023 as just something of a veteran stabilizer. And I suppose the only thing pushing against that would be perhaps if Kyle Hendricks himself made it known that he, like you said, maybe he would like an opportunity to not because he wants to be away from the Cubs, but be in another pennant race and be on a contender. Not that the Cubs would honor that just for that reason, but I think it would factor into the discussion.
I like how we I'll let the listeners into our pre-show meeting here, where we were like, I don't know what to talk about. What do we got? And then Patrick comes out here with the best hot take he's had in weeks, and like, maybe Kyle Hendricks wants to be traded. I love it, Patrick, coming out.
No, I specifically, he does not want. I did not. But this is just me, and I'm not trying to rip Hockey or the coaching Patrick staff. Mooney.
But yeah, like, I know what you're. That I know Kyle what you're saying. Maybe it makes Cubs sense
and just wants to be gone. That is unbelievable.
I think it's a fascinating, just the way you approached it from kind of the other side. Does it make sense for the Cubs to trade Kyle Hendricks, but does it make sense for Kyle Hendricks to maybe want to move on in a sense? I think that's a fascinating way to look at it. I think ultimately when we talk about, this is something Patrick and I talk about a lot with each other, with when we write, the Cubs don't, when they're talking about, when you talk about extending Wilson Contreras, or the idea of, well, how could they trade the heart and soul of the team, Anthony Rizzo, the Cubs don't really put a lot of stock in that when calculating how do you extend a player, how much are we going to offer this player in an extension when it comes to free agency. But here's the thing, they have Hendricks, right? They have him already at the price that they wanted him at. So I think they still, while they may not value it monetarily, financially, and give it to them contract-wise, I think they do understand that there's some value of having Hendricks around. I hope they understand that, like that, because there is value for him to be around. He's been around a long time with this club. He's seen the highs, he's seen the recent lows. He understands like the game planning system. I think he's the type of guy you want on the staff to kind of mentor guys like Steele and Keegan and Killian. And they're going to continue to have young pitchers coming through. We know they value having veterans like that in the bullpen, right? We've talked to guys that talk about how valued that is, just having a couple veterans in there, especially when they have young guys coming up. I think they have to value Hendricks in that sense. And now, if some team were to bowl them over and offer a package of prospects, then yeah, all that stuff goes out the window, right? But that's very unlikely to happen at this current, with the way he's pitching. If you like, getting bowled over is something I could see them convincing them to move Ian Happ, right? But I don't see how there's a package of prospects that makes sense for them to move Hendricks, even if he isn't pitching great. I just appreciate, but I liked the point of view of taking it from a completely different point of view, Patrick, because that I hadn't looked at it that way of, hey, a team is going to see him as like, this guy can be really valuable for a postseason push. And maybe he's undervalued at this moment. Maybe we could steal him and then get 2 great months of Kyle Hendricks. I hope the Cubs see some value in him beyond just the statistics right now, because I think they need some sort of stabilizing force within that rotation, and just relying on adding a free agent veteran or whatever it is. I hope they understand how valuable he is to that clubhouse and that rotation.
This is right up your alley, Brett. Like, this is like what you've wanted to hear, that our friend Jordan Bastion asked Rafael Ortega yesterday post game. And so I went into yesterday thinking, if I could see Hendricks, it was kind of a shorter pregame availability because it was a day game on getaway day and whatever. But I just want to be like, so Kyle, can every quote you've ever given us over the last couple of years about getting traded, can I just like reuse though? And he's such a good dude, he'd laugh, be like, yeah, sure. Ortega got the question yesterday from Jordan from MLB.com, and through translator Will Nadal, he gave this amazing answer of like, yeah, I'm playing for all 30 teams, that, that would be an amazing opportunity. And it was just this great dose of honesty of a guy who, as you alluded to, Brett, has had to battle to get back into the big leagues and carve out a role, and who has kind of a broader understanding of things and is like, yeah, there's always scouts watching. And I think that's, whether it's Hendricks, and we can see scouts again now that we're back kind of in press boxes and clubhouses and dining rooms, and you see them with their backpacks and their briefcases, you know, sitting gossiping at the lunch tables and going out, and I think there are going to be scouts who value Kyle Hendricks's poise and guts and will be pounding the table for that. And you have someone like Ortega, who's just a nice complimentary player, and that if you plug him into a different lineup in a different situation, all of a sudden be like, well, this guy, you know, this guy can hit certain pitchers in certain situations. It's valuable.
Yeah, I love you're quite right. I love that response from Ortega. Both as someone,
he hates so the Cubs, like, but whatever, you know.
Yeah, no, I mean, I love it's like he has become my avatar for complimentary players that I believe have value on every team. So it ends up being like I'm like desperate for the Cubs to trade Ortega, but it's really just that I find, like, I just feel like if I were a contender and I had, even if I had three great starting outfielders, he just strikes me as a guy I would love to have on my team. You know, plays every outfield spot, hits righties very well, and, you know, just feels like a plug and play piece. And that's why, in part, I loved his answer so much, like you said, where he knows what he's had to go through to get to this point, just to even have semi-regular playing time in the big leagues. And he also, I'm sure, knows that although he's not even arbitration eligible for two more years, he's going year to year. I mean, that's just where he is in his career. And so if he were to get traded to a contender, it's like, what's the difference to him? You know, I think as fans, we want all the players to be like, well, the only team I ever wanted to play for is the Cubs. And I love being on the Cubs. And this is the only place I want to be. But it's a job. And it's a very competitive job. And so if you're a guy like Ortega, you know, again, being traded maybe is just your vehicle to make sure you have a job next year. And I respected the answer and I liked it. And I do like the idea of him being a trade chip for the Cubs this year, not only because it might return a little value for the team, but because It just, his is a cool story. It'd be cooler to see him land on a contender than perhaps to see him slog away for sporadic playing time in the second half of a 100 loss Cubs team. All right. So moving off of that, and speaking of, what's the transition? Other guys who are later developing perhaps and might get sporadic appearances for a 100 loss Cubs team. I wanted to touch on Adrian Sampson. And I, like perhaps you guys, I don't really have a ton to say other than to like underscore something I've been writing after his last two outings, which is, so we saw him a good bit last year. This is a guy who has been an up-down guy in his career. He's 30 now. He spent some time in Korea, and he's never had outsized success, even at AAA, just sort of capable. And he'd come up to the big leagues and it was sort of like, okay, you know, kind of capable on a bad team, that's fine. And what we saw last year is he was having some success, but he was just giving up rockets. And there was nothing in his performance last year that could have led you to believe that there was a different type of pitcher, just command control. And sometimes the ball finds gloves, sometimes it doesn't. And you live and die by that as a sixth, seventh starter type. At AAA, at least based on the stats this year, it was a similar story. Doesn't walk anyone, doesn't strike anyone out, tons of contact, and sometimes that's okay, sometimes it's not. Okay, so fast forward to these last two appearances. He comes up and is just a bulk guy needed last week for the Cubs, and I forget which outing it was. Someone got blown up, and he stepped in and filled in for a little over four innings. Nobody was paying attention really at that point. I don't want to say nobody. Some of us were, but it was a game that was over, so it was sort of easy to tune out and to dismiss anything that happened because it was all extremely low leverage. But if you were actually watching, Sampson was throwing like 95. His slider had this nasty bite to it that was baffling guys. I mean, he was getting whiffs up in the zone on his 95-mile-an-hour four-seamer, and it was shocking. He was getting a huge volume of whiffs that was completely dissonant with anything we've ever seen from him before. I noted it at the time, and I was like, I don't know what to make of this. I've never really seen a guy just sort of one time look like a completely different pitcher at age 30, just out of nowhere. So then he gets the start on Saturday. Fill in, Cubs just needed somebody, and he was up. He's rested. Go ahead. He does it again. He goes five innings. I think he struck out like six. He got 15% whiff rate or something. Just, and like, if he's showing up on Pitching Ninja because some of the pitches are so nasty. And it's like, if I didn't know it was Adrian Sampson, and I didn't know the profile, and I hadn't seen him last year and all this stuff, it was just sort of random guy. You show him to me, I'd be like, man, this guy's interesting. This is some really interesting stuff that he's throwing. And I don't know what to make of that. Don't know if it means anything. Don't know if there was some substantive change. I dug in as best I could. He started throwing the four-seamer a whole lot more these last two outings. He has added a cutter. Maybe that improves the shape of his slider somehow. Don't know. Just, I've never seen anything quite like this, where it was almost 10 innings worth of a guy mid-season looking just completely different. And I don't want to set people up for the fall when, as typically happens with guys, he reverts to who he was, but it does look fundamentally different. And I don't know what to make of it.
Yeah. I'm just quickly looking at, like his whiffs in a game and whiff percentage. He's had some outings like that. The only ones above 20 pitches came last year with the Cubs in September. And then the one that the relief appearance that we saw just now, the only ones above 20% and above 20 pitches were the last couple of years, and then really not much of that. So I'm kind of at a loss for words as well. I don't know. Just looking at the numbers as far as how often that's happened and what he's doing, if this is anything more than a blip, because he has done it occasionally, just not in bigger bursts, very rarely in the type of big burst that we saw his last start. This we saw a little bit of it last year, but yeah, I don't remember it standing out like this. And you're right, like the stuff almost looks better, like it's better, but the numbers aren't showing any like bigger drop or movement in any or anything just yet.
The velo is up. He's up about a mile and a half on the four seamer. Yeah.
So I don't fully get it. I don't fully know what he's changed, if anything, if we're just seeing one of those runs from a pitcher that happens. It's one of those things where, for me, I'd like to talk to Tommy and guys on the coaching staff and just confirm, like, has anything happened here? Or is he just like, what's going on? He's just pitching well. He's just feeling good. Sometimes that happens, right? A guy just feels really good on the mound. And it's like, I haven't changed anything. I'm just feeling good, and it can go away, right? And then they end up Brian Dunsing, right?
Brian Dunsing's out there just trying to like have his breakfast or something, and he's catching strays. It's like, what the? I didn't do anything to you.
Very nice guy, great guy, great dude. And I remember asking him like, what's going on? One time I asked him like, how are you like this good all of a sudden, what's going on? And when his response was like, I'm not really sure, I was like, oh, okay. well, I'll write that, but that doesn't sound promising. And then he I think it shortly after that went to hell for him, unfortunately. Great dude, though.
It was because your question. He was like, wait, maybe I'm not doing anything differently. Oh, no.
He got terrified and just was awful. But Adrian Sampson is a similarly great guy, and hopefully there's something concrete that we can dig into here. But I haven't figured it out through the numbers, other than very small things that we discussed here. Like an uptick in velo obviously matters, and a slight change. And maybe it is as just as simple as that. Like he's using some pitches a little more often, and those pitches are better than they were a year, two, three, four ago.
I mean, I'm not sure how Sampson had time for this enlightened breakthrough or like residency right. in the pitch lab, since he was promoted to the Cubs May 8th, optioned to Iowa May 9th, DFA'd May 10th, claimed by the Mariners May 13th, then optioned to Tacoma, DFA'd May 21st, sent to Tacoma May 24th, like the free agency May 25th, signs back to the Cubs on the 31st, selected June 16th, option June 20th, recalled the 23rd. But what I will say, Saad, I've alluded to it, is that Sampson was pissed when he was sent out after having a great outing. And he said he chose his words very carefully because he knows this is kind of a political process as well. But he made it known that he fundamentally disagreed with the decision. And I think, you know, at this point, he should, you know, he kind of realizes his spot in the game and kind of how these transactions work. But I also thought that David Ross made a great point of like the guys who are okay with that, you don't really want them on your team. He didn't like put it exactly that way, but it was just kind of this thought that you want guys who are competitive and believe they belong and are willing to fight. And Sampson, to his credit, has been that guy, whether it's going overseas, kind of bouncing back and forth, going up and down. And, you know, he's certainly, just from a presentation aesthetic standpoint, it's nice to see a guy who can kind of get them through a couple of those innings instead of just, you know, being down 5-0 by the time you kind of settle into your seats and start watching the game.
Victorinox, the makers of the original Swiss Army knife, have been a reliable companion for life's everyday challenges, mastering functionality, innovation, iconic design, and uncompromising quality with its products. The Victorinox Swiss Army knife provides you with all the things you don't think about until you need it. Tweezers, a screwdriver, and even a corkscrew. With the Victorinox Swiss Army Knife, you can be prepared to master everyday life. You can find Victorinox Swiss Army Knives at Dick's Sporting Goods.
Yeah, and I think it's notable, you know, it was tighter on Saturday. I mean, it wasn't like it was another just sort of nothing situation. You're starting the game in St. Louis, and I didn't know that about his unhappiness about being sent down after the last outing, which, I mean, I remember I did like a whole write-up on how awesome he looked, and then I think I clicked publish, and about 5 minutes later, he was optioned out. And I was like, well, all right, whatever. So I got it. It was out there before. Hands up. So we'll see if he now gets another start. Obviously, the Cubs are still lacking three of their arms in the rotation. Marcus Stroman is throwing bullpens now, so he could be on the sort of closer side if the shoulder responds well. Drew Smyly is still in that buildup phase, and at last check, Wade Miley was still just resting. And we kind of know what the target is for those guys to return, and just the goal, I'm sure, is to get a couple starts before the trade deadline. And in the meantime, we'll see if Sampson were to get another start. I would say his path just got a little easier with the last game in the series, which was Alec Mills struggling badly. And, you know, I'm certainly not ready to say, throw in the towel on Alec Mills as a swing guy, because it's been 17 innings this year. He wasn't healthy and, you know, whatever. But it's not as if we didn't already have some concerns about Mills as a starting pitcher. Struggles badly against lefties. The command control, again, is always subject to bad BABIP days that just blow you up. And I think as we get closer to, you know, him being a guy who's going to be arbitration eligible, who's on the 40 man, where the Cubs are sort of getting really strong in these multi-inning type guys, I think I'm not sure how long the leash is going to be for him. And it was interesting in tandem with this conversation that he was followed by Matt Swarmer, who otherwise would have made that start, but was moved into the bullpen finally because the Cubs want to see how the two-pitch mix with the plus slider plays in relief. And he threw 2.1 scoreless, hitless, looked great. And I think that is going to probably be a pretty nice role for him. And so, you know, I think there's a coordination among those three guys in terms of what the Cubs are going to do next time through the rotation. But I very much liked what we saw from Sampson starting and what we saw from Matt Swarmer in that multi-inning relief role.
Yeah. You know what? The Swarmer multi-inning relief role, and I've written this, I've said this before, I think that's where he thrives in the big leagues ultimately. And also, I mean, we know how much Ross likes someone that he can trust in that role. He likes having someone that can be in that role. He prefers Keegan Thompson in that role than in the rotation. But if you have someone like Swarmer, and if you have someone, and if you have Keegan pitching like he has, what has it been now, two or three starts after the dreadful, you know, the Baltimore, it's been two starts since Baltimore and New York, which were just awful starts, right? And we've discussed why that can even be important for him to have those. But if you have Keegan in the rotation now and Swarmer in that spot, that's nice. Those are nice pieces to have going forward, right? So many other things that need to be addressed, of course, to make this a good team. But it's nice to have certain roles filled, or think you have certain roles filled for the future, and with guys that have come up through the system. And Swarmer's actually a guy from the previous like amateur and player development group, right? And he's also, I remember one of the guys in amateur kind of just like, you know, just frustrated with all their picks. Like, he's like, every single pitcher that we take, it's like they lose 2 miles per hour or something the second they hit the system, or they get hurt. Swarmer was one of those few guys that he was like, finally, we have someone who ticks up, whose velo is ticking up, who looks a little better, who's figuring things out. Now, it was a longer path for Swarmer. I can't remember his full path, to be honest, and if he hit any injury roadblocks, or if it was just, you know, pandemic hit and it slowed everything down like it did for a lot of players. But I do recall that in like 18 or 19, he had a breakout, and and someone in the amateur department was just like, finally, someone whose velo is taking up. So it's a good story, a nice win for them to have someone come up to the big leagues and actually possibly maybe carve out a decent role for themselves.
The Cubs have clearly cornered the market on multi-inning relievers when you have a five-run deficit. Like, I mean, seriously.
You had to throw in that last part. I knew you were making a joke, but I was going to be like, well, but he's actually saying something that's true. It's good, nice to have these multi, and then he throws in the, when there's a five. Come on now. No, but I mean, I do wonder, in all seriousness, in the new world that we've entered into, finally, of the 13-pitcher maximum, I do anticipate we're going to see teams experimenting more with the balance of pitchers that they have, and whether, like, how many of these types you can roster, because it's a question of how quickly they bounce back. You know, it's easy to say, oh, we want to have a guy who can go three innings. Well, but then if he's down for 3 or 4 days after that every time, then you're essentially just carrying an extra starting pitcher. And I don't know that you can afford to do that with an 8-man bullpen. So, I do think there's going to be, I think arguably there could be a premium on organizations who can develop guys like this that can bounce back quickly. So be it a 5-run deficit or a 5-run lead. all right. That's all I got. You guys got anything else before we wrap it? No, we're good. All right. We'll end it there on Mooney's cynicism. So we appreciate you folks. This is why we all needed to be back. See, this is what we get. This is On to Waveland. It's the Cubs podcast here at The Athletic. I am Brett Taylor. You can catch my stuff at Bleacher Nation. That's Sahadev Sharma and Patrick Mooney. Get theirs at The Athletic. We always appreciate you listening. We'll be back at you later this week, and take care and be well. Goodbye.